For many years, mention of Texas sent a chill shuddering down Michael Lewis's spine. He remembered it as a wondrous place, new and immense and mysterious, shining in the sun. He remembered it also as a place of cruelty and cold terror, for it was there, when he was 16 years old, that he saw his father's brains blown out by a Spanish officer who left the boy wounded on an open prairie to die alone in a wild and alien land. Michael Lewis felt a sharp tug against the pack mule's lead rope and turned to find the animal had tried to go around the opposite side of a tree from the horse he was riding. "Damn you, Jethro!" He regarded the move as stubbornness rather than stupidity. The mule had stoutly resisted bearing the heavy weight of Michael's winter fur catch, and had given in only to a determined will more stubborn than its own. 21 now, and going on 22, Michael could respect a strong will, for he had one by inheritance from his father Mordecai. But he had made up his mind that when he sold his pelts, he would sell the mule along with them. Respect and acceptance were not the same. Michael was done growing. At 6 feet, he was as tall as his father had been, and sometimes people who had known Mordecai reacted with startled eyes at the sight of Michael. They swore he had become the image of Mordecai Lewis, rangy and strong, his face beginning to take on the stone-chiseled edges, the stern jaw that had been the mark of his father, though at the moment it was hidden by a winter's growth of whiskers. His blue eyes could be severe and unyielding, yet had the same faraway look sometimes as when Mordecai had dreamed of distant places yet unseen. But people remarked that there was more pain in Michael's, and occasionally a quicker flare of anger. Considering what those eyes had witnessed, they said there was good reason. With the first sharp cold spell of the winter, the field work finished, Michael had gone off by himself, deep into the woods, as had been his custom the last several years. He had slept in a tent sometimes. Other times, when he expected the camp to last a while, he would throw up a rude log shelter against the snow and the bitter winds, running his trap lines in wild country where white men's boots had seldom trod. He had encountered other men only 3 times all of this past winter. They were like himself, eager for a brief visit with their own kind, for the sound of kindred voices, then just as eager to set off again alone. They were solitary men who accepted loneliness as the price of putting behind them the noisy demands of other humankind, the clang and clatter of so-called civilized life. Michael no longer wondered what had drawn his father so often to the woods and had kept him so long from home. He knew. A man could think, and no one would ask what he was thinking. He could talk to himself, and no one would interrupt to ask what he meant. He could listen to the voices of the forest, speaking in 1,000 tongues, and learn to understand them all. When old memories and old fears threatened to smother him in the dark of night, and he awoke shouting and fighting, there was no one to question or blame or pity. He could confront his private torments in his own way, and no one else would know. Restless, his older brother Joseph said of him, but Michael was only restless at home, on the farm, or in the settlements. Except when the dark dreams came, he was not restless on the trail, in the forests, or camped on the rivers. There he could find a measure of peace, of contentment that escaped him where people lived in clusters. "Like his father," his mother said, and Michael accepted that as a compliment, though he was not sure patience always meant it to be one. She had been taken hard by the death of Mordecai Lewis. She had been fearful of it for years because Mordecai had not been one to seek out the safe and easy path, or long abide one if he happened to cross it. She had worn the widow's black a respectable period, while Uncle Benjamin had watched over her family as if it was his own. When he and Patience decided a proper time had passed, he had made the two families one, taking Patience to bring warmth back into a home left cold by the death of Aunt Nancy. And in due course, the combined family grew once again with the addition of a baby boy named Jonathan. Now the boy was 3 years old, and still Michael could not quite bring himself to call him brother. It was a hell of a thing, he knew, to blame a child so young, so unaware, but Michael could not help it. He could not quite accept this final affront to his father's memory, this symbol that his mother had accepted a place in the bed of another man, even his own uncle. He had moved back from Uncle Benjamin's farm to the old claim, ostensibly to help Brother Joseph keep up the place. Ownership had passed to Joseph, the eldest, as was the custom. Joseph had taken excellent care of it, as he had from the time he was old enough to handle a mule and a plow by himself and take on the responsibilities that should have been Mordecai's. A hard worker, Joseph was, a man who knew what he wanted from life and believed the way to get it was to irrigate the growing ground with sweat. Michael found no fault with him, but his interests were often different from Joseph's. Michael understood Joseph's ways better than Joseph understood Michael's. They came to disagreement at times, never in a bitter manner, but never quite finding a compromise agreeable to them both.